Some crimes are so shocking, they don't just make headlines, they forever change our society. I'm Katie Ring, host of America's Most Infamous Crimes. Each week, I take on one of the most notorious criminal cases. Each case unfolds across multiple episodes, released every Tuesday through Thursday, from the first sign that something was wrong to the moment the truth came out or didn't. Listen to and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here. Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your Thursdays are off to a great start.
Shout out the Hoggies.
Shout out the Hoggies. Nothing gets us going like a nice little college football debate randomly in the middle of April. Or early April, I should say.
I don't want to derail the top of your third hour segment, but you kind of got me going a little bit here.
I love it. I mean, I understand all the points you're making. I get it.
It's
maybe
just
part of
it's
just Indiana, and I still can't compute it. And I'm still asking the question. It was such an outlier national championship.
I'm with you there.
And I know that the talent profile will continue to improve for them.
You assume. Yeah.
I don't disagree with that. Maybe it's an Indiana thing. I don't know. I'm fascinated by the entire thing and how it plays out.
I also want to be fair to listeners that aren't sharing your fandom, whoever that may be.
Yeah.
Of like, I just think if Lanning wins the first title.
Yeah.
I don't think you're holding the opinion of, let's wait and see. Maybe there's an 8-4 season
but
here.
But the only difference would be, because you're spot on, the only difference I would say is that I would argue every year sans his first year, which is not an expectation in year one, they've been a national title contender.
I wouldn't disagree with
you. Year two, it was only the Washington games that they lost. Yeah. Year three, they went undefeated. And then, I mean, the ending was not great. They got steamrolled, but they were undefeated in 13-0.
Yep.
And then last year, they made it all the way back to the semifinals and dominated Texas Tech in the quarters. And so I have a sample size now where they've shown they can't get over the hump, and maybe they never will. I don't know how it will play out. Mm-hmm. They've been in the mix 3 years in a row. Where you can tell me you think Indiana was, and that's fair because they were 10-2 in a playoff team, but I thought there was a pretty clear...
We didn't pick them to win the title that year.
No. And it was year one, so there shouldn't have been that expectation on them. I'm just saying I have a one-year sample size of them being one of the elite teams in the sport, and I... Does it continue every year?
Yeah.
Or is it randomness? Those are the questions I'm asking.
And nobody predicts the future, but about that, it's not about, to me, Indiana... Because I'm with you on the... And I think every fan would be of like... Indiana won the effing football national championship, right? Nuts. But year one was 10-2. Even if that schedule was weak sauce, and I remember that was the argument against Indiana making the playoffs.
Yeah, 10-2.
They didn't have a win, and I'm like,
or 11-1. I think they were in the regular season. I think the only loss they had was Ohio State, if I'm not wrong. It was like legitimately the only team with a winning record they played was Ohio State, and they killed them.
They went 11-1 that year?
I'm pretty sure. Let me double check.
I thought it was 10-2. Either way, you double check. My whole point that season was. We're holding something against a program that literally nobody in America picked to even be in the middle of the conference, let alone near the top of the conference.
Yeah, they were 11-1.
11-1. So
they started 10-0.
Shortchanging them.
They beat that bad Michigan team who couldn't throw
That's
a forward pass,
right.
20-15.
They struggled in that game.
Struggled
yes.
in the game, Thank and then you. They went on the road to Ohio State and they lost 38-15.
I think I had them losing that Michigan game in my head, so I said 10-2. 11-1.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't buy it that year, 11-1 year one for a guy whose track record says he wins literally everywhere.
Right.
And then year two, he comes back, goes undefeated, upgrades the roster, and wins the whole enchilada. I just don't know how many coaches we would be saying or questioning this with. It's my only point to you.
I don't question that he's an elite coach and he's one of the best in the sport.
So what stops you from not...
Having a 25-year-old roster of guys that played together for 4 years and the number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, a quarterback.
But he went and got a receiver that, you know, he's been a little problematic. But
Marsh is a really good player.
I assume if he can be dialed in, he's a great player. Yeah. Hoover, I'm just at this point with him and Rourke's play and then getting Mendoza from Cal, I'm going to assume Josh Hoover's pretty damn good for them.
Sure.
His coaching staff stayed intact.
Is he number one pick good? Is he Heisman Trophy good? Because that was, we can't overlook the idea that that was a very important part of their season.
I also think this year, and I mean no disrespect,
Mendoza
here,
was awesome in all of their big games.
He was awesome in their big games. He had such dialed throws in the title game, the windows, where he put the ball.
I mean, some of the throws he made against Oregon were some of the most impressive I've ever seen from a quarterback in a big stage.
I mean no disrespect because he's going to be the number one pick of the draft.
Yeah.
I also think it was a very down year for the Heisman.
Sure, that's fair.
So I think Hoover can have an exceptional season and not be a Heisman finalist.
Yeah, that's
based
fair.
On how everything else
he wasn't the guy until they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, and then he became the overwhelming favorite, and he was going to win the award.
He was there that's in fair. It, but, it, yeah. you know, go look at his numbers. His numbers are really good, But when you stack them against other years of Heisman winners, I just thought it was kind of a down year for the Heisman.
I guess here's what I'll say. Last thing on this. Yeah, I love this. Dude, I'll keep doing college football as long as you want to keep doing college football.
I'm just a little surprised. We're questioning, like, hey, the staying power. Maybe not on a title-winning window, but
8-4
is
probably unfair. 8-4 is unfair.
That seems extreme to me.
I'm just saying, like, when I watch certain programs, when I watch Georgia, when I watch Ohio State, Notre Dame's probably a little bit of this now. I would argue my team's somewhere in the mix here. Like, There's a feel of a team where every year you go in and you're like, yeah, they're going to have a chance to do it. Now, does it happen? I don't know. And that's the only thing I'm asking is Indiana become that?
Every
year you go into it and you're like, well, yeah, Indiana is a bona fide national title contender. 8-4 is probably way too fair of a throwout. They play nobody. I mean, they will be 5-0. They're North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky, Northwestern, Rutgers are their first five games. Mm-hmm. They're going to be 5-0. From then on out, I'll just start at Nebraska, Ohio State at home, at Michigan, home against USC, at Washington.
Does one more year of him being, let's call it 11-1,
if he does it again next year and they look, they don't need to win the national title.
I'm not saying that.
But like, you watch them, they are one of the best teams in the sport. They beat these elite teams on their schedule, which I don't know how many of those you would consider elite. Ohio State certainly is. I think Michigan will be better this year than they were last year. They will be improved.
Dude, I'm so curious how that Whittingham experience
is going to go. You have an actual coach who's not DMing.
I agree.
You know, porn stars on, like, whatever, on Instagram during halftime.
But isn't there a vibe of him? I might be disrespectful to our guy Kyle. It feels like I'm trying something new a little too late in my career vibe.
I mean, we've seen that with Mike Riley in Nebraska. It didn't work.
I just think
the spot that Michigan's in is better than the spot that Nebraska was in.
He's also going to get such incredible support from the boosters and the NIL and all that stuff that he'll have what he
needs.
If
Underwood hits,
yeah.
And that could happen, it might not happen. DJ Lagway didn't this year, and he went into the portal, so I don't know how
I'm
going to
assume
out.
His defense is elite because all the Utah defenses were pretty damn
so
good.
So when Nebraska be good, you got to go to Lincoln. It's not an easy place to play. Ohio State at home, that's a toss-up game, and Ohio State's again going to be one of the best teams in the sport. Does Michigan take a step with a competent head coach? How do we feel about USC this year? Is USC a legit playoff contender for you?
See, and I have more.
And then you got to go to Seattle at the end of November, which is not an easy place to play. Damn near beat, you know, they hung around Oregon for a little bit in that game at the end of the season. So we'll see how they look this year. Maybe their quarterback stuff has resolved itself. Maybe they end up having a good year. I don't know what the future is. I'm just saying those are five games. That if you go 10-2 to me shows that once again you're in that mix, you're a legitimate playoff team, because this schedule is not the schedule that it was in year one, despite the fact that you play nobody in non-conference.
Do you think most of the college football world is hoping for his comeuppance?
That's a good question.
Let's humble this guy some.
I don't think so yet.
He's been pretty, Google me.
Yeah.
Ohio State sucks. Michigan sucks, and it's like, whoa, what's this guy talking about? Oh my God, 11-1, and then year two,
undefeated.
Wins at Oregon, goes on the dais in Eugene. Yeah, we expected to win.
Yeah,
and he just like looks at you so matter of factly. Wins a national championship. He's got a little Hurley in him. I think there could be a pretty decent percentage of college football fans. Obviously, they want their team to win it, but also, like, I hope this guy gets humbled. Come back to earth a little bit.
I think it depends on the fan base you're asking. There's probably some of that out there.
This fan base, I think, is quickly going to become hated.
Without a doubt.
They're already pretty loud.
I mean, they jumped on the bandwagon, which I don't blame them. They didn't have much of a bandwagon to jump on. They've been irrelevant my entire lifetime. And
their
so
basketball team has
coming
sucked.
Out of the woodwork, like, I don't blame them for that. But yeah, it was a little funny seeing that many Indiana, like, oh, you're an Indiana fan, huh? Never heard that about Mark Cuban in Indiana. Did anybody know that Mark Cuban was an Indiana guy prior to last year?
I did not know that about
Mark Cuban. Clue.
They outsold the national title game in Miami.
In Miami.
Against Miami.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly hoping he gets it, but I'm obviously a very biased objector there.
Well, what is he if he has a 9-3 season, right? Like, what are those press conferences like? How spicy does it get?
Yeah, let's say they lose it. Nebraska trips him up in Lincoln. Ohio State beats him by 2 touchdowns, and then they lose to USC and they're 9-3.
Does he strike you as guy that, okay, now it's not going well. Hoover is turning the football over. Oh, my God, we've lost another big game. He's 9-3. He's on the verge of no playoff.
Still an elite coach. It was just nice to see him be human.
And he comes to the press conference and drops one of these, I don't know what you want me to say. Everywhere I've been, we win. So maybe it's not me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I could
start throwing his players under the bus.
I could see. There's an element of that. I could see him doing that if he's not having a dream season.
I will maintain. I don't know how it's going to go. Nobody could see the future. I think they're the most interesting story going in the sport. And what they do next year, do they back it up? Do they go on another run? Does it dip a little bit? Indiana in 2026, to me, outside of what my own team does, is the biggest story in the sport.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because I have Bama.
They could fire Kalen DeBoer.
Texas.
Arch Manning.
LSU.
I get it. They're all great.
Like, I have so many, what is going to happen here?
Indiana won a national championship.
I know.
Do you guys know that?
Trinidad Chambliss is coming back.
He is, yeah. Granted his eligibility for another year.
That's done, right? There's no Supreme Court decision we're waiting on. That's Tom Dundon.
It is all done.
Okay.
Done.
Sure.
He'll be in Oxford. Sure. We can get to more college football if you want. That was fun.
I love talking college football, man.
You know what I did during that segment?
Take your hand and put it down your pants, huh?
I mentioned it briefly. Like, Jeremiah Smith coming out and saying what he said, I just will not understand. As long as the rules are in place as they are now, and we'll see if the president gets his wish of the 5 years and one transfer.
That's not going to do anything.
Right. But if these guys don't have to be guaranteed to stay somewhere for two, I just will not understand why all the elite players at his level, of whatever position, don't hit the portal every year and do an open bid. You have no idea if you'll be an NFL star. David Bailey, I love. Could be the second pick in the draft, could be an absolute disaster who never hits and never gets a contract extension. This might be his prime money-making window.
Take it all while you can.
So every year, $6 million, $7 million, $5 million, 3 years in a row. Go make $40 million and then go to the NFL. And if it happens, awesome. If it doesn't, you've cashed in.
The funny part about that, because you're spot on, and it would be hard to not do that as a kid. The reporting that doesn't happen anywhere in that story is how much is Ohio State paying him?
Oh, I know.
So maybe Ohio State matched the $10
million. Which is fine. If you want to hit the portal and the team you were on gives
Miami
you the
called
most,
and said, here's $10 million. He says, hey, Buckeye Nation. And they're like, yeah, sure, here you go, $10
million. Or maybe Ohio State
so maybe
shorts
he is doing that.
$1 million, but NIL collectives and all these people behind the scenes are like, we'll give you this to make up for the $1 million difference that you'd make at Miami. Right. And he's like, yeah, I'll stay here.
I brought it up the other day. With so much money being thrown around just in our face, do we know how much money is still moving under the table now in college sports?
No.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much these guys are making. We act like we have this information.
None of it's public knowledge. That's $40 million roster. Based on what?
Right.
Your belief?
Who spends the most?
That guy's
on
making
roster.
$3 million. Based on what? There's no contract. Like, you've seen the contract? You're a lawyer?
Sauces. Trust me, bro. That's like what we're hearing now. Right. Trust me, bro.
I know the numbers.
You know so-and-so's making like 12. Where did you see that? I did not see that story.
Unless he showed you
the tax
day
returns.
That the check
here's my every 2 week
account.
Check account. Let's go ahead and extrapolate out. Okay, carrying the one. Oh, he's making that much money.
Man.
How about that?
Give me the W-2.
Some of the dubs. All right, that's enough college football, even though it was a great time. I enjoyed it.
Enough college football.
That is true. There is never enough. Spring football games are right around the corner. Maybe we'll do some check-ins with certain programs as they get ready for the spring game. Let's get to We Have Found the Solution. Will it fix the problem? Next on The Fam.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Masters underway. Hello, friends. Happy Thursday from Augusta National. The Golden Bear almost killed somebody on his ceremonial tee shot this morning. That's how the whole tournament got underway.
I saw some of the clips from their press conference. Gary Player just throwing Jordan Spieth right out there of like, you know, his entire career was ruined from that ball three. Why did you need to say that out loud?
Gary Player will say whatever Gary Player wants, and half the time I yell at him for being stupid, and half the time you're like, this guy's 90 and Dude, Gary Player being 90 and as physically fit as he is, he should be studied.
You broke my brain that he was 90 because I'm looking at him. Yeah. It's Tom Watson, him, and Jack, right, on the table?
I did not see the full thing, but I believe that's
I think it's
Tom, Jack, and Gary Player, yeah. He's 90 years old. He's born in 1935.
Jack is younger than him. Jack looks 10 years older than him. Like, Jack, to me, looks like he's 96.
Jack is 86.
Yeah.
He's 4 years younger.
And that's okay
than
to look however you look when you're 86.
Yeah.
Gary Player, and you told me this about him, and I'm telling you guys, you need to get on this in your lives. you don't need to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. Start exercising. Some level of 30 minutes or more, do something. Because Gary Player's key to being 90 and looking 70 is he lifts and he lifts runs weights.
He works out.
He's active.
He has said that he's going to do this until he's 100, and I believe him.
That'd be so funny.
Him being able, like, he played legitimately in the par 3 yesterday as a 90-year-old. And he was, like, hitting good shot. Like, he's still functionally playing golf. It's bananas. So, that happened this morning. Jack almost killed a guy. Underway. We'll give you a leaderboard update. Casey will have that in his updates throughout the show as well. Magic Hack coming up top of the hour. It is a fun little Thursday. There's no way we'll have enough time for it in this segment, so we'll kind of set it up and maybe give an opening argument, if you will, and then we could get to it a little bit more in the next segment. Mm. But we did this when you were on vacation, and it was floated out that the NBA... What problem is the NBA facing? Worse maybe this year than any other year that they've ever faced?
Tanking.
Well, the NBA is claiming, and Adam Silver came out and said, don't you worry, guys. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to nip it in the bud.
Did you see Draymond Green's solution?
No, what was his?
Find the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Because they find me when I get technical.
Every time you purposely lose a game, here's a $10 million fine to the owner. They'll stop losing right away. So they're trying to solve this issue, and they are going to meet on May 28th. It's the next Board of Governors meeting, May 28th, and that is when they will vote on anti-tanking draft lottery reform. They're leaking all of this through Shams to get the reporting out there. Let's gauge it, see how everybody feels about it. And yesterday, Shams reported that the number one option that has gained the most momentum is this. Are you ready?
Yep.
There will be 18 teams in the lottery. So currently what? There's 14? Is that right? Yeah. 16 teams make the playoffs. 14.
Yeah.
So you're adding four more teams. Yep. So it'll be the bottom 10 teams plus the teams that miss in the play-in.
So the two play-in losers.
Yeah. And I believe that includes teams that lose in the first round of the playoffs, if I'm not wrong, or some version of that. But basically the bottom 18 teams in the league, some that lose in the play-in, will all qualify.
Well, if you have 14 now, you'd have two from the East, two from the West in the play-in losing, right? So that'd be
Okay, here we go. Sorry, I didn't read the full thing. You should read the full thing. That helps. Bottom 10 that miss the play-in and the 8 that qualify for the play-in.
Okay.
So 7 through the bottom of the East and West will all be available in the lottery.
I said that months ago.
If you're the Blazers, it doesn't matter if you win or lose next week. You're in the lottery either way, right?
That's great.
The bottom 10 teams are the teams who don't make the play-in. Will each have a 8% chance of moving up in the lottery. So the flattened odds for the worst 10 teams in the league are all equal, 8% chance.
So wait, the 10
The
worst
10 teams?
Teams
who do not make the play-in
have the same odds.
8% chance of moving up in the lottery.
Okay.
The other 8 teams, the ones that make the play-in, that then get kicked, you get my point, they will split 20% odds of moving up, and all 18 spots are drawn as a part of a lottery. Mm. So right now they do it where if you don't jump into like the top four, if you don't see your team and you're like the Blazers, for example, they missed the play-in, you don't see them in the top four, you're probably not moving up. You're likely going to be where you're at. They will draw every draft pick as a lottery pick with the same odds, and once your name is called, obviously you're taken out of the other ones. And that's their view of this will solve tanking. Will it solve tanking?
I don't know if you'll ever solve tanking. Will you be able to solve and stop tanking to the levels in which it's reached this year? Yes. I think not only will they be actively trying to change it to this and what Shams is saying, I think at this meeting they're going to have real honest, hard conversation of we cannot operate as a league doing this. This is bad. I went and looked at it last year.
There's some articles out there about just how horrific it is. It's wild.
I mean, Tim Reynolds of the AP has been on it for weeks. Yeah. It feels like every week Tim Reynolds of the AP says, this is the worst blowout night in NBA history. And it's been like that for what feels like 2 months. So right now when you look, let's just use the West, right? The best, worst team in the West is the Pelicans. They're not in the play-in. They're 26-54.
Yeah.
Everybody else is below them, has a worse record. So it's below 26 wins. When you look at last year, how it finished, okay, the Phoenix Suns had 36. Our Trailblazers had 36.
Yeah.
We are talking about a 10-game swing of crap. So not only have they gotten worse, they're getting worse by like a points scored margin. They're getting worse by a points loss margin.
Yeah, the outcome of the blowouts are just massive.
I mean, you have too many 30-point losses. Last Friday, I signed off the show. I didn't look at the NBA slate and go, oh, I got to change my whole Friday. Dude, every game was a 30-point blowout, basically.
Yep.
And then Saturday, you got a primetime, you know, afternoon Wemby Jokic game.
That was great.
And that was great. Everything else largely is crap. I've always said the best teams play against the best teams. It ends up being a good game. But when you get any of the bottom feeders involved, it's just not going to be good. So I think they will change this rule. Obviously, Shams is reporting that. And I think they're going to have a real, like, he's got to be a little David Stern in this. You can't do this anymore. This needs to stop. The only thing I would change to that, and some people hate this suggestion, but I don't care. You add the play-in teams winning and losing, so you got four from each conference,
right,
paired with the other five from the conferences that are bad.
Yeah.
Put all those teams in it and make all their odds flat. Tell the 7 seed and the 8 seed.
You have the same chance as the worst
team.
You
have just as great a chance to win as the 17-win Utah Jazz. Boy, you want to talk about kicking a team in the butt?
Yeah.
Utah's not actively trying to tank games. The Kings aren't fouling ridiculously to lose a game.
Because there's
final
no difference.
Minute.
Your odds are the same.
There's no, and you should be rewarding teams that are trying to build up and win versus saying, well, Utah won 17 games and was trying to be the worst team in NBA history.
I get interesting. So I'm curious how people feel about this. 503-864-6326. That is the fan text line. Will this solve the issue? It has not been voted on yet, so we don't know if that's the actual answer of what they're going to do, but it seems like that's the one that's gaining the most momentum. An interesting thought I had on Sprague's theory there. A little bit more on this on the other side. First, here's CJ with SportsCenter. I'll give you a Masters update in a moment. The Magic Act coming up top of the hour. Talking about the NBA because they have floated the idea, well, this is going to solve tanking. So if you're just turning your radio on, here's the idea that is gaining momentum. They're going to vote on this at the end of May. Shams reported yesterday 18 teams will be in the lottery. So the bottom 10 that missed the play-in plus the 8 that qualified. So basically, if you're 7th or worse in the West or Eastern Conference, you will be in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom 10 teams each have an 8% chance of moving up in the lottery. The other 8, who are the play-in teams, will split 20% on, so 5% each. My drift there, and then, or maybe a little bit less than that. And then all 18 spots will be drawn as a part of the lottery. Now, you pointed out you like the idea of flattening the odds for everybody who's playing or worse. So 7 on down, just give them all the same odds, whatever that mathematically would be. The other thought that I had with this, if the play-in teams are a part of the lottery and you're giving me, like, that's a better chance now than you would get in the current Blazers situation. Let's say the Blazers get the AC, they lose, they don't win the play-in, and you're going into the lottery. I don't know exactly off the top of my head what their odds would be, but it's pretty, 2%, 1%, very, very slim to move all the way up. Would you get a team that tanked out of the 6 seed to be the 7 seed?
Well,
are they
like the Spurs? They have kind of the nucleus in place.
I think it depends on who you are, yeah.
Right?
Like, let me see who the 6 seeds are in each conference.
It's Minnesota right now.
If you're Minnesota, would you rather be the 6 or the 7? If in these rules?
Because
I would rather be the 7 to give me a 5% chance at the number one overall pick or whatever the math would check out to be.
Yeah,
it'd be Minnesota and Toronto is the 6 seed.
Toronto could
maybe Atlanta because they're a half game behind Atlanta.
Because I think Toronto's going to get swept. And
probably.
Toronto would like DeBonsa.
It's like
or
what better
Peterson.
Serves you, right? And having so that's the other part of this. No matter what you promote, there will be an unintended consequence of it. And I'm just curious what it will be.
Sure. I'm going to save this for being way wrong. I just don't believe people would operate like that. Now, easier said than done, right?
Oh.
If you know you've got Cam Boozer.
Bryson just drilled a guy.
Going from 6 to 7, or at least your shot is just as good as the worst team.
Right.
Maybe you would get the teams to, oh my God, that hit somebody really hard.
Dude, it drilled them in the head.
Maybe you would get teams.
That was a good bounce.
Great kickback. Chip a putt. Maybe you would get teams that would actively sabotage themselves. I just don't think you would. Because I think the sign or signal you'd be sending to the league with that kind of change is that we have to change the perception of our league. I think there's a million things you could actually point to from this season that are great. The only thing people are talking about when they talk about your league is this.
Or the games played thing, 65 games for a season of awards.
It has nothing to do with, hey, did Cleveland make the right trade? Is Harden going to finally snap out of it? Hey, the Knicks are kind of just laying in the weeds in the 3 seed, and they're sitting right there. Boston's got Tatum. How about the Charlotte freaking Hornets are actually good? They're terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these little things throughout the league that we could be pointing to, but the only conversation, because it's largely driven by people who don't watch basketball.
Yeah.
So when they want to go, NBA section, ESPN, tanking 65 games. All right, that's the show sheet. Instead of like, did you see last night this, this, that, and happened? Like, and I get it. That's what the America we're living in is. But I just don't think teams would operate that way.
Okay.
And by the way, for all the, you know, naysayers of my idea of this, of like take seven on down and make all the teams of the same odds, you can point out a bunch of good points like, oh, what if the Blazers were ever what Utah currently is? Yeah, but they're not. And what if the Blazers were in a position to be a 7 or 8 seed, lose in the first round and get swept, but then have the same amount of odds?
A 5% chance or a 6% whatever
Cam
the odds
Boozer,
are.
Yeah. DeBonta or Peterson.
Right. Changes your perception.
And holy crap, you want to talk about rewarding a team who did it, quote unquote, ethically.
Right.
It'd be teams like that.
Yeah, right now, so I just pulled this up. The Blazers, as constructed, that's assuming they miss the play-in as the 9 seed, they would have the 12th pick in the draft, most likely. Their chance at the number one overall pick would be 1.5%.
And I believe that's what Dallas was last year.
I believe so.
Golden, I think they fizzled out, and they ended up somewhere where Portland kind of is.
Golden State, if they are to not make the play-in, is the 10 seed in the West. And, you know, we'll see how that – like, if you lose to Golden State in the 9-10 game, then you would get this. You would have a 2% chance at the number one overall.
Yeah, Dallas
pick.
Was the 10 seed last year.
There's a 2% chance, and it hit.
And they hit – yeah, it was less than 2%. I think it was 1.7% chance, and they ended up hitting. The funny thing in hindsight is – because my idea is not going to happen. It's going to go to what Shams is saying. The funny thing in hindsight is that, like, in the years we really needed to do it, we didn't do it well enough.
Yeah. Who could have been arguing that for the last four
years?
But
isn't that, I think in hindsight, that's
what's
going to be
kind of funny.
This is
the deepest draft of all of the drafts that we've had in our tanking window, and we are now making the play-in.
You should have not allowed what Anthony Simons did in the Scoot draft.
Yes, yeah, that having Victor Wembanyama would be pretty cool right now, wouldn't it?
The Cooper Flagg draft, we did that a year out, and we're like, we got to be worse. We chose to be better and win 36 games so we could say, look at our trade for Denny. It was great.
We kept a bunch of veterans around, didn't want to play the young guys.
Nope.
God forbid we actually do it the right way.
In fact, they were so good in the second half, they used the entire second half as their marketing gimmick to build up this year and tell you, how good the defense is, it's not. It actually got worse this year. And how much better they were, it wasn't. Their coach got handcuffed by the FBI. And then this year, it was another argument that you could make, but they've ascended.
That
so
ship has
we
sailed,
are.
Buddy. That ship has sailed.
In the run of being terrible, our 3 years of we needed to be even worse than we were.
It's the most Blazer thing of all time.
We chose to be better in two of the three. Yeah. And the other three, we had a four-game railroading of Anthony Simons.
Yep.
Cost us Victor Wembanyama.
Should I sim the lottery right now? What pick do you think we're going to get? Let's see.
Ooh, that's a good one.
12th pick. We didn't move. Cool.
12th pick?
Washington, Utah, Brooklyn, Sacramento, Indiana is your top five. Those are your top five picks right
there. Give me a second here. I've got the 2 days ago, I got the no ceilings mock. So you said we have 12?
We have 12.
Okay, right now.
Simming the lottery is a lot of fun. I could press this button for hours on end. It's the trade machine, but even better.
So this one has us... Okay.
Oh, you it said 12?
12, yeah.
12.
Yaxel Lindenberg.
I'll take him.
So the tough thing on the no ceilings thing is it has us giving our pick to the Bulls because it does. They don't think we're going to lose the play-in.
They think it will win the play-in.
Yeah, so it conveys. But in that range, you've got Maurice Johnson Jr. is 14 on their mock. LeBaron Fillion from Alabama, the guard. And then you've got Koa Pete at 12. And then Yaxel at 11. So you're right in the Maurice Yaxel Co-Pete territory if you end up keeping your pick.
Any other Chinese centers out there?
Well, look in the second round of the mocks and then tell yourself,
fast forward to the
who
first.
Would randomly make sense for them?
Who's going to go there?
Actually, who would randomly not make sense that we would be willing to scout and take?
Kareem Lopez is projected to go in the first round.
Ooh.
And he is from New Zealand.
Let's take him, dude.
Do we have any New Zealand owners?
Now we're going to be huge in China, and we're going to be huge in New Zealand.
He's a Mexican professional basketball player playing for the New Zealand Breakers of the Australian National
Basketball League. Now we're talking, baby.
Here, I'm looking at the bottom.
Multiple cultures, bring them all together.
You want Braylon Mullins? He's 27th.
That's our guy right
Did
there.
Do we reach up to 12 11. And grab him?
He's our guy. Top 12 pick right there. Last note on this, and then we'll move on, I promise.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is a... It's a never-ending conversation about the league, and I'm just as guilty as charged of the not watching the NBA, and this is a storyline that interests me, but I'm not watching. Like, wake me up when the playoffs start.
But it doesn't
start.
Interest you to the point of actually caring to watch the NBA, which I find that an odd position.
I'm going
like,
to watch a lot of the playoffs when they start because that matters. This just doesn't matter to me.
The first round's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
the first round is going to be. The biggest argument I've ever made is
I'll watch a lot of the second round of the NBA playoffs.
Second round will be good.
From then on out, and that I'm excited about. But watching a game now, I'm just, okay, they won, but it doesn't mean anything. Just get me to the playoffs is basically where I'm at.
What is the best first round series as of now with the current standings?
As constructed.
And then let me add to this. Sure. You tell me what you think the best first round series would be in the East. And what's the best first-round series in the West? And then I want to add this caveat.
Hmm.
What if they actually listened to this show? They were P1s. They said, dude, that guy's got good lottery thoughts. Change the first round to best of three.
They should.
That would make it interesting.
The only one that does anything for me, Lakers and Rockets is funny. Watching the Lakers lose is always entertaining. There's a chance with no Luka. Even if he plays, they lost in the first round last year.
Mm-hmm.
Denver-Minnesota is the only one.
What if I gave you Hornets-Pistons? You're kind of interested.
Mildly.
You're probably picking the Pistons to win in five?
Mildly interested. I'll watch a game. I'll turn it on. It'll be on. It'll be on my TV.
He's going to have his kid there, LaJuan.
Con Knipple, baby.
LaJuan. I did that while you were gone for the Magic Hat.
I forgot about LaJuan.
His kid LaJuan.
Last note, though, on the impact.
That's a real thing.
That is a real thing.
He had a kid with a person named Anna Montana.
Anna Montana. Not Hannah. Anna.
Social media hot. And his dad did a podcast and said, yeah, I'm going to have LaJuan playing basketball when he's four with sixth graders. What?
This is going to end well.
He's put three kids in the NBA. I can't really question his brilliance.
If he didn't make the first one wear his own shoes, he might still be an elite player in the NBA. The only other impact of the lottery stuff is what it does to teams like Portland who have future draft assets, and the value of them is going to change. Doesn't mean it's going to be a good thing or bad thing. It's like, if Milwaukee trades Giannis this summer and we're not the landing spot, we would all have assumed that they're going into a rebuild, right? If that's the move that they're making. Milwaukee, if they trade Giannis.
Yeah.
So those picks might not have the same value if you flatten the lottery odds for the bottom 12 teams, and they're one of the worst teams in the league over the next 5 years. So it's just another thing to keep in mind. Yeah. Or they find a decent young player, and maybe they're Phoenix next year, and they're like, hey, they're the 8th seed in the East. That's not bad. Well, guess what? Now all of a sudden your odds of getting the number one overall pick are better than what you thought maybe going in. So it doesn't have to be a good or a bad thing, but the value will change slightly on them depending on what Milwaukee does and what we do with those picks. But time will tell. That will be in the future. A Masters update, Magic Hat, coming up top of the hour. Back after this on The Fam.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Well, the sun is out, the birds are chirping, and the Masters is underway. Hello, friends. Welcome.
Hello.
To a tradition unlike any other, let's take a look at the leaderboard. We got the Magic Hat coming up. Shorty here, a little Diet Johnson segment. Magic Hat, top of the hour. I'm submitting, finalizing my submissions. We'll get to them coming up here in 10 minutes from now.
Got some audio.
Oh, I love a good audio, Magic Hat. The name atop your leaderboard right now, ladies and gentlemen, come on down, Kurt Kitayama.
Ah,
four under par, 10 holes in.
Okay.
And then you got, how would we react to a Tommy Fleetwood major championship?
Pretty great.
You're rooting for him?
I mean, I'm rooting for him number one of anybody.
You know me. I love Fairway Jesus as much as anybody. I'm a big Tommy Fleetwood guy. For those who watched the par three yesterday, Frankie Fleetwood. Hole in one. Dude, yeah, he got a hole in one.
That was fun.
His son, if you've not seen Frankie Fleetwood interview highlights, go.
I've been doing my hardest to get it over the green. I've been practicing as hard as I can.
Oh, my God.
Just not reaching it this year, but I'm just trying my hardest.
Now,
that was last year.
Yeah.
That was last year for Frankie. He came back this year, it's like the biggest thing now with the par three. ESPN had their broadcast window, and they put the tee time to conclude the broadcast with his shot. So the ninth hole is one that's all the way over water, and Frankie's trying to hit it on the green, and they gave him two shots this year, and he couldn't do it. And the fans were chanting his name, and then Laura Rutledge interviewed him and was like, how did that feel to have everybody chanting your name, Frankie? Well, it felt so good. I just wish I knew all of their names so I could chant their names too. Like, he is the cutest kid on the planet, dude. I don't know. He looks like he's maybe six. I don't know how five. I don't know how old he is.
You add the accent into it.
Oh, my
God,
dude. He's just the cutest thing ever. You know who he's sponsored by? Have you seen his hat?
No.
Not Frankie, his dad.
Oh, no.
So he's kind of done I don't have any sponsors, and everywhere he's gone, he's worn course gear for the tournament. He's done that. Like, at the Players, he'll wear a Players thing. He was wearing a Masters thing. His hat.
Is it Sam Altman?
Blackstone. and just and like massive block letters across the front of the
I don't know if I'm mad at it.
And it's like, what? Not the grill.
Oh, you mean Black Rock
or Black? What's the name? What's the company I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I think
buying up all the houses.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Black it Black Rock? Is
I think
that what
it's
it is?
Black Rock.
I thought it was Blackstone.
No, that's the grill.
I think it's Blackstone.
Is
Tommy,
it?
Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood has the Blackstone,
and it's not the grill.
Okay,
not the grill. Blackstone.
I had that backwards then.
I was like, Tommy.
You sure it's not the grill?
We can just tell
Orange
ourselves
font?
It's the grill because I love Fairway
Orange
Jesus.
Font?
I'd love for him to
what
win.
We found out Tommy Fleetwood was also buying up all the houses in America.
Swindling people out of their mortgage payments.
Completely robbing the middle class from out under them.
Patrick Reed, for the first time ever, started birdie eagle.
Terrible,
he is
dude.
Tied for 3 under par.
Oh, God.
I know. I've been very conflicted. I don't really know how to feel
but
right
look,
now.
All these guys.
I know. They're all
tied into something.
I know they are.
So I can't really hold it all against him. Nobody's going to be perfect in this regard. If he won it, it'd be really cool. I mean, the weird thing about his career is how, like, he just got his first win.
Last year, the Tour Championship.
But then he ended up winning the FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
So he was technically the champion of the Tour for last year.
I think that was his first ever win was the Tour Championship.
I believe you're correct.
Because he was in the mix for, like, 4 other tournaments, and he blew all of them, and then he won the biggest one at the end of the year.
And I think that's his problem is he's been in contention in a few of these, and then he just ends up crumbling in the third or final rounds. And so I think it'd be cool from a he-hasn't-done-it standpoint, but it's still so early. I mean, I just like that you see names that you recognize. I hate when it's just full of guys that are, like, fringe at best.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Sam Burns, 2 under. Let's see, DJ's 1 under. Akshay is 1 under. Xander, 1 under. So, it's looking pretty good early on. Some of the bigger names, Bryson is even. Rory is even. He's got a putt coming up here on the 5th hole. He's been a little wayward with the driver. Even, he's on the 5th green putting for par. And a lot of big names haven't even teed off yet. So there's a long ways to go. And the feeling is, we'll see if it holds up, because sometimes this doesn't end up being the case. Rory made his par putt, by the way. The feeling is that this is going to be a lower scoring Masters because of the conditions. Course is going to bake out a little bit. They're going to get the balls rolling faster than they usually do. It's going to be hot and warm and a little breezy all weekend, which is the perfect conditions for a hard course. So, maybe 8-9 under is your champion. Rory, I think, was 11 when he won it last year. But good early leaderboard. Get your pimento cheese sandwiches and get ready to watch some golf today. The Masters is underway. Lots to get to in the final hour of the show, and we will start with the Magic Hat, and that is next on The Fan.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.